Good morning. See a couple of people are online. Good morning. All right, looks like people are slowly starting to filter in here. Hello, everyone. I said good morning before, I forgot. Lots of people in different time zones here, so sorry about that.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, everyone.
Hello, everyone.
Let me just, I'm going to log back in here as the main open on my SSL so I can start the recording. So I'll be right back. Okay, so the recording is going. Let's see, who do we got? We've got Craig. Just trying to make sure we have people from every team represented. It looks like we do. So should we wait for a little bit more or get going? What's the consensus here?
So the ONA team is still gathering in the Kenya office, but if another team would like to go first, we can please go ahead.
All right. So this will be the first time that I'm going to be taking over the management of this meeting from Sam. So I'll try to do it in the same way that she did. I noticed the last few times that I saw her do it, we went through the sprint reports for each one of the teams. So I can do that first, and maybe that'll give your team enough time to get connected there, Craig.
Great.
Let me share my screen. I think this is what I want. Okay, please let me know when you can see that.
Yes, we can see it.
Excellent. All right, well, welcome everyone. This is the showcase for Sprint 106. We didn't have a sprint after, or excuse me, we didn't have a showcase after Sprint 105. A number of people were on vacation. And most of the work actually was done on, much of the work at least was done on testing, so there wouldn't have been too much to showcase, so we decided not to do it after Sprint 105. So this is the first showcase that we've had for about a month. So I'll just go through each one of the teams and highlight some of the work that was done on Sprint 106. Let's see, right here I have Team GSI up. Their work this sprint was on helping to document the core reporting requirements based on their previous experience with ELMIS. And then they were also helping to spike Hearth as an option for the Fire server. Looks like there's still some ongoing work. They did get through 4 story points. And there's a number of story points, or a number of tickets rather, that are still in progress. I think some of these, one of them is in review, but I think some of these might be finished here later today. That's my guess, at least. I think we have Elias on the call who will be going through their sprint in a little bit.
And I just want to mention that one of the spikes, 5261, we added that later to the JSI sprint. So.
Okay. All right. I'll go to Team ONA. Eventually. There we go. So Kafka, or excuse me, Team ONA rather, was focused on the reporting stack mostly. They were finishing up the Kafka storage, getting all of the stuff set up on Jenkins and starting to analyze the reports, which I was involved with over the last few days here in Seattle. They got through 18 story points. And I think a few of the ones that are remaining will actually be done, or marked as done soon. So I think they actually got through more than that. right.
Yeah, we have the remaining six. At least four of them will be finished by the end of the day, the calendar day here in Seattle.
Yeah, so for those of you that don't know, we had a really productive meeting with people from JSI, people from ONA, people from Village Reach, all together in the same space here in Seattle, going through these reports and discussing them and many other things. It was really a productive couple of days. All right, switch over to Team Parrot. Team Parrot looks like was primarily focused on some changes for Jenkins. I know there was also some analysis going on in terms of the demo data. I'm sure we'll hear more about some of the work that they were doing. A lot of this stuff may be behind the scenes, but it's really, really important stuff. So I'm glad that they were working on these things. They got through 23 story points this time. And then, once again, they have a few more that are in progress that will hopefully be done here shortly. And I think this would be my gap. My gap was focused on researching options for MCSD and then on some of the high priority bug fixes. I got through, looks like 8.5 story points with another eight or so that are remaining to be completed here. Looks like a few of those haven't really gotten started yet. All right. So I think this was a good sprint overall for the team. So I'm really interested in seeing what each team really focused on in terms of the details. Let's see. Craig, have more of your team arrived from Kenya side?
Yes, I'm just confirming. I think everyone's on the phone.
All right. So would you still like to wait, or are you ready to go?
Yeah, we're ready to go.
All right. I will stop sharing.
Great.
And give it over to you.
Okay. I'll start sharing my screen. Okay, and then just if someone could confirm that you're able to see it.
Yep, it just came up for me at least.
Great. There we go. Okay, so in Team ONA, there are a couple of kind of, just to summarize the activities, we invested a lot of time in standing up the reporting stack on Jenkins. So Jason was the primary team member that did that. So he created Jenkins, forgive me if the terminology is not correct, but he created scripts in the OpenLMS deployment reference deployment GitHub repository to be able to stand up the reporting stack for UAT. We also spent a significant amount of time ensuring and kind of reconfiguring the Docker Compose setup, and I'll have him highlight those changes. Anthony and Jeanette have worked on streamlining the Kafka component, and so it's kind of as we've mentioned in the past, Kafka is this immutable ledger that contains every transaction that is pulled from the OpenLMIS microservices APIs, so that at any point in the future, these transactions can be replayed from a point in time. They're also able to be, we can also use Kafka to kind of reload the Postgres database without having to go and hit the OpenLMIS APIs. So there's an efficiency element in there as well. So if for some reason we want to change how we format a particular data point that we extracted from the OpenLMS API, we can pick a point in time and from that immutable ledger, repopulate the Postgres database based off of that change at some point in the future. So Jeanette has spent a significant amount of time working on that over the last month, and We're happy to say that that activity looks like it's finished with this sprint. So Jeanette will describe what she's done. And then finally, as Wes alluded to, Clay and I have been meeting with Team JSI, Team Mind the Gap at the Village Reach offices over the last 2 days. We have a third day today. And we have been specifically focusing on the reporting scoping. We have a lot of notes and a report that'll come out of that that sets the path for the next three or four sprints to the 3.5 release on the reporting stack. So with that, I'll go ahead and hand it over to Jason to describe the work that you've done in particular, I think the reconfiguration of the Docker file and the reporting stack work on Jenkins.
Thanks, Greg. I'm going to share my screen.
And I've stopped sharing, so go ahead.
Okay. Cool. So I spent quite a bit of my time this last sprint kind of reconfiguring the our Docker Compose setup on the OpenLMIS ref distro repository. We noticed that that setup or our Docker Compose setup in that repo wasn't usable in scenarios where you're running the Docker daemon outside of the or remotely from where the Docker client was being hit. So my main targets were the NiFi, the NiFi, the DB, and the superset services. These services previously were relying on volumes that directly kind of connected to directories in the repository. So we have in this repo, we have configuration directories for each of the services, and those containers or those services were directly hooking up through volumes to those directories. So we changed that up and we kind of borrowed what the rest of the OpenLMIS deployment does. So we create a configuration container that kind of pulls in all the configurations from those directories. So for NiFi, we have specific configuration containers that were are related to fast loading in the drivers. So right now we only have one driver to be used with the NiFi database connections and a bunch of scripts for spinning up or handling the fast run experience on NiFi. So so that's the work that was done on NiFi. Well, the configuration container loaded in the configs, and we kind of changed up the service to be able to handle such the change. Sorry, the other service was that we changed was on the Scaly service. So we switched from using the official Scaly image to the OpenLMIS Scaly image. On the superset side, what we handled was the database, the data sources that are loaded from Superset. Those are now handled through the way or the method I have described earlier of kind of spinning up a configuration container that copies over configurations. Same to the database container or the database service on the Docker Compose file. So that kind of helped us transition or helped us reuse the OpenLMIS ref or the Docker Compose file described in the ref distro repo in our Jenkins deployment. So we now have a shared Jenkins deployment for the reporting stack that utilizes how it's deployed from the ref distro, which involves spinning up or importing the NiFi templates or reporting, loading in the reference NiFi templates and loading in the reference superset data sources. So this kind of with the with the configuration or the script we defined in the OpenLMIS deployment repo are able created a Jenkins project to kind of spin up our reporting stack. So I just started a build. Let me quickly then
And I should note that the IP address there, I hope I can work with Josh today to update the DNS, but the DNS that we're targeting is nifi.uat.openlmis.org to be able to access NiFi for the UAT server and superset.uat.openlmis.org. And so we're hoping to get that fixed and implemented by the end of the day.
Yeah,
it should be up there, Craig. It may need to propagate.
Great. So given the time, I wonder, so we've got the build process going. I wonder if we should switch to Jeanette to talk through the Kafka work that she's done.
Okay, cool, thanks.
Thank you, Jason. So is Jeanette on the phone with Anthony? Is she with you?
Yes. Hi, this is Jeanette.
Great.
So I'm going to talk about the issues that I worked on, which deal mainly with moving stock on hand data from the API. And then we're putting it into Kafka, just as Craig explained in the beginning. And then from Kafka, we are putting it into the Postgres tables. And we're doing most of this process using NiFi. So NiFi is using a schema to create the tables. And then we are creating the Kafka topic. And then we're moving the data using the NiFi flows. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Great. So and there's just one outstanding ticket that we have in the sprint. It's extend the previous NiFi template to read from the compacted topics. Is that still on target to get done by the end of the day, or is that something that we will shift to the next sprint?
Yes, that will be done today. I'm just finishing up on testing, but it should be done in like an hour.
Great. Thank you. While we have Anthony there, would you be able to talk through some of the items that you've worked on?
Sure. So I was still working on ingesting reference data and ingesting the data I hadn't done by last week. I haven't been working on gap projects this week. I just started on Monday. So I have ingested all the ones that were supposed to be ingested. And one is pending that needs a JAWS transform spec, which I'm working on at the moment, hopefully to be done by the end of the day.
Okay, so to put that into perspective, what we have is in previous activities, we've documented which endpoints we should pull from, the GET request in the REST API. Anthony has been systematically walking through those for the reference data microservice. And this is kind of the baseline information set of facilities, locations, commodity types, and orderables that we're ingesting into the database. That'll be a precursor to the next bolus of work that we identified in our meetings this week, and will help us move forward. So it looks like I'm currently, you're not able to see my computer, but it looks like I've got a database connection issue with NiFi. And so I was hoping to share the Superset and NiFi demo that is on these URLs, uat.openlms.org, but I'm not able to get it to function right now. So what I would like to propose is that by the end of the day, or assuming that these items get fixed by the end of the day, creating a short video, a screen sharing video, probably tomorrow, to showcase what I was hoping to showcase here over the remaining 5 minutes of our showcase. So I'll plan to do that and then send that out and attach it to the meeting notes. And I'm sorry I didn't. I'm sorry, it's not working at this moment.
All right, thanks, Craig and the others from the ONA team. Any questions or any comments for the work that they did, Joe? All right. So is there a specific order to which teams go? Or can I just pick a random one and people be all right with it?
Generally, it goes ONA, JSI, and then Mind the Gap.
All right. I will stick to the convention then. So, Elias, I think you are on here.
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Ashraf had told me that I was to hand it over to you.
Yes, I think Ashraf is coming back from Seattle, so he won't be able to make it to this meeting.
Yes. All right. Take it away.
Okay. Let me first share my screen. Can you see my screen?
Yep.
Yes.
It just came up.
Okay, great. In this sprint, the primary focus for Team JSI was around documenting some of the reports in the ELMIS, and another focus was to continue a spike that I had started before this sprint on exploring HARS as an option for the FHIR server. I have worked primarily on the latter one, so I will be talking some of the findings there. Before I get into that, one small background. Before this sprint, I went to Tanzania for the OpenHIE workshop. And after that workshop, there was a hackathon, on which we explored some tools in the OpenHIE community and not in the OpenHA architecture that we can use. And one of the tools that I try to use for FHIR server in our OpenLMIS implementation was Hearth. Hearth supports fire resources like location, and in our requirements, we also had some requirements around implementing MCSD server for location sharing, and also participating in a federated location management scheme that the countries may implement. So one of my tasks was to continue that spike and look at a few more questions that I did not answer in that hackathon. Those questions, some of those questions were there before even I went to that hackathon, but there were also some other questions that arose after we looked at some of the tools. A few examples of these questions were, for example, Jambi Heart is using MongoDB for database. And in the OpenLMIS, what we are using is Postgres. How do we use the MongoDB if we decide to use Hearth as our Fire server was one question. And I've researched a few options on whether it's possible to host MongoDB in a recommended maintained or managed way, and those are documented in this ticket. And there is also another question around transactions. Since MongoDB is known for not fully supporting transactions, how did Hearth deal with the lack of support for transaction was another question that I had to research, and those findings are also documented here. There are also a few more cross-cutting questions, like if we introduce Hearth in our architecture, will it be supporting OAuth, the authentication technology that we're using? It looks like Hearth uses an authentication framework called JWT, which is from Auth0. There is a potential that we will be able to develop some updates to Hearth itself for it to support OAuth, but as it stands now, it does not look like it supports OAuth. And there are a few more questions like this that we needed to explore to decide whether this would be the best tool to introduce in the OpenLMIS. This is one of the spikes that I worked on. Another half of this spike is to explore also other alternative tools out there. Another alternative is to use Happy Fire. This part of the spike is still in progress, and some of the findings are not yet documented, but that's also something that we've been working on. The things that we are learning as we go and explore these tools is also documented in another wiki page in very much detail. And I think you'll be able to go there and explore those if you wish. This is a high level overview of what that spike was about. If you have any questions, I would welcome them.
I think I owe you some comments, but this looks great.
All right, thank you.
Watching it as it goes.
Yes, thanks.
And if needed, we can schedule a discussion in tech committee about this. But as Elias is working on these spikes, and I'll show what Team Mind the Gap has been working on. We are just going to start writing the tickets from the spikes.
Yeah. As we get into ticket writing, we definitely need some discussions. But yeah.
Yes, thank you. If that's it, I will invite Adunya to speak about some of the things he worked on.
Great, thank you, Elias.
Okay, thank you. Can you see my screen?
Yes.
All right. So one of the tickets that I have worked on was developing requirements for the consumption reports that we have on the LMIs. So I have documented all the requirement specification about it, the one we have on the LMIs. And also, there is also documentation about how one can start over on the LMIS code base and navigate through the project, how to access the reports, where the reports can get its data, the way the Java files, the scripts, everything is organized. So I have already worked on the document, it was reviewed and finally I can upload it on the Confluence page. So that was one of the things I have worked on. The other one is I have continued working on the ticket that was suspended for a while because of some missing requirements. It's about toggling requisition quantity units. So last time I've made some discussion about it, and I've also talked with Ashraf about it. And this time I've continued, I've updated the work. As you can see here, whenever somebody is typing a value, an associated pack size will be visible just beside the field.
I think we're not seeing your screen. Now we're seeing the approve requisitions filter. Maybe you have another window that you're showing.
Approve requisition filter. Oh, you can see the product page, maybe?
We're not seeing the product page at the moment. There we go.
Really?
Now we see.
Oh.
Now we see nothing but your background. All right, there we go.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Okay. I was just connected another screen and that was confused, okay? So you can see, right? All right.
Yeah, now we can see. Yep.
On the quantity, toggling feature, it was removed, and instead an additional UI tweaking have been done on that. So as you can see, the conversion unit can be seen just beside the approved quantity input field, and when one types here, the automatic conversion will be seen. So I talked with Ashraf, and this was designed by it was approved by him. So once it's actually currently but once this one is approved, everything will be committed and I can finish the work with this. And these were the two tickets I have worked on. That's it from my side.
Thank you, Adunya. Is there any comments? Can you leave up your UI for just a second? I didn't know if there's any comments on anybody had.
Yeah, so it's great to see that you and Ashraf came up with a visual. Just curious to know, is this configurable in the requisition template as we discussed so that you can turn on this UI component, or is this always going to be there?
Yeah, it's going to be there always because on the requisition template, No, but supposed to do it from there, if that's a requirement.
Okay. I might follow up with you afterwards to make sure I fully understand what you guys decided on this, just to make All sure. Right. Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm curious, are there any other places within OpenLMIS, and maybe this isn't a question for you specifically, Adunya, but are there any other places in OpenLMIS where we have a UI element similar to what you have created here, or at least similar in terms of the kind of data that it's displaying to that?
Something that's similar with this?
No, this is the first time this UI element
is being used.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting layout for it. I wonder if we might want to get some feedback at some point on one of the, maybe the technical committee or something like that, in terms of the layout and how it's presented.
Okay.
So maybe we could schedule that for, I don't, is the technical committee the right place for that?
The product committee. Okay. I think the technical committee, in terms of like creating a UI, like checking in with, well, someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but when we create a new UI component, we put it, I'm losing my word right now. If someone could help me out, we have the
reference. We have a standard, standard document.
Exactly. So,
style guide.
The style guide. Thank you. So, I'm not sure if someone wants to chime in about the process to get approval for like a new style element for the style guide or how we do that. But the product committee will want to review it and give feedback. And I do have some thoughts on what I'm seeing to make sure that everyone's okay with that, because it's a UI change. We have to get product approval for adding a new UI piece.
Yeah, I put down a note to add that to an upcoming, or at least put it on the possible agenda for an upcoming product committee meeting.
Yeah, and as for getting this into the style guide, I would just suggest to either discuss this at the technical committee or just send to the dev group for the bigger audience to review. And if it looks okay, and after it's approved at the product committee, then you can just go ahead and add it to the style guide.
So, Adunya, can we ask you to put up to post under the dev forum, just explaining how this works, how it looks, and request feedback?
Okay, I'll do that.
That would be great.
All right. Okay.
All right. Any other comments on this?
So I was also wondering whether we are planning the same for other requisition columns, like the requested quantity and possibly others that are using dispensing units, or is it specifically just for the approved quantity?
It's.
Okay.
You can respond if you already want me to respond.
You can continue, Mary. You can continue.
Okay, because we looked at doing this in a toggle first, but because the reporting columns are all in dispensing units, if you toggle to packs, you have a problem with an inaccuracy, because you would either need to use like decimal points or something, because you can't round it or change it because they're reported dispensing unit numbers. So the only real column that was targeted for this feature in the get-go is the approved quantity. And so what we had talked about was, do we add another column? Do we do something within the cell? And so we were going to look at a couple options, because the toggle wouldn't work for a user. Like, it does in fulfillment. because in fulfillment, the base unit is packs that we're sending. Here in requisition, the base unit is dispensing units. And the approved quantity, they just want to see how many packs it is. And so one solution was we talked about doing a column. And another idea was doing it within the cell. And so last we talked, we were going to take a review of the different options and decide which works best. So it's now we're kind of seeing the option within the cell. So that's a bit of a background on this. And maybe we can capture that in the ticket. So when you post the dev forum, folks know kind of the background of first trying to see if there was a way to toggle all of the numbers, but that doesn't make sense and you lose some accuracy there. Was that clear? Or feel free to elaborate further if I missed something.
Yeah, that's it. The conversion is solvable, the accuracy of the numbers. Since the reported columns are there, whenever we are converting to the pack unit, the calculation wouldn't come up properly. When we are adding and subtracting, the number doesn't seem, the calculation doesn't seem right. It's because the conversion from dispensing unit to the pack size, we lose some numbers because of the accuracy. So that will be the output quantity will be the only column that the conversion can properly apply. That's the reason we have did that.
Okay.
All right, any more questions?
Yeah, I had a different question. What happens when you print?
The print is on with the dispensing unit.
So this doesn't show up when you print at all?
Yeah. It's over whenever they are typing the numbers to see it on packs.
Okay.
Is there other question about it?
Sounds like that's it. Thank you very much, Adunya.
Okay, thank you.
Is there anything else on the JSI team to share?
That's it from JSI team.
All right. Adunya, I think your video is on.
Oh, sorry.
Turn that off. Excellent. Okay. Are there any comments in general about the overall stuff that the JSI team shared? Okay. So next, I'll hand it over to Sam for the Mind the Gap team.
Okay, so I'm just going to give a quick overview of what we're going to discuss and then hand it off to Lukasz and Changsun. But this sprint, we wanted to focus on researching the options for MCSD and some bug fixes. So today, Lukasz will talk to you about the spike that he worked on for Hearthfire, and Changsun did do some work on updating the orderables model as well that he can briefly chat about. And I just wanted to highlight that we did have a part-time developer join us during this sprint as well, and his name is Hassan. He's not on the showcase today, unfortunately. I didn't invite him beforehand, but he has been working on bug fixes and actually started working on a bug fix this sprint. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to Lukasz to give a brief explanation. Lukasz, do you want me to continue sharing my screen, or do you want to share?
I can share my screen.
Okay.
One moment. Okay, can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, so mainly I work on the spike to check the possibility of syncing fire-related reference data resources with resources that are on a fire server. As a library, I use Happy Fire, and in the end, I created a working proof of concept. It has been verified with one of fire version. And in the end, I also update the wiki page where I briefly describe how to create a RESTful client and how to retrieve a resource, create or update it. Depends if the resource exists or not on the fire server. And very briefly, we can do this in two using a generic client or using the annotation driven client. With generic option, we simply create a client and we can use it. In the annotation driven option, we create an interface, which is very similar to our Spring JPA repository interfaces. And then we also use methods that we define the interface. I think for the shock is that everything, if more details are necessary, I can talk about that on the tech committee meeting. But if you have any questions, then I will try to answer.
No questions at the moment, but I would love the link to the wiki page.
Okay. So that's everything from me, and I can pass the board to Johnson.
Okay, let me share my screen. Let me know if you can see it.
Yep, we got it.
Okay, so the main thing that I was working on is work that I had started before 3.4 release that we kind of decided to hold off until after the release, just because it's such a kind of a critical change to the system that we didn't want to find a bunch of regressions right before release candidates, just before releasing. So that's the updating the orderable model to essentially contain a version indicator. So this is sort of the first part of versioning orderables in order to kind of, so that different parts of the system will use different versions of orderables based on need. So, so the main part of this ticket is just essentially to introduce this version ID, and then kind of update the demo data to include it, make sure the migration adds a new version ID field, and then updating this get orderables endpoint to accept version ID so that when you're asking for a certain orderable, you can also ask for a certain version of that orderable. So let me just show you the API console, the change in the RAML. So you can sort of see the change here. It now has a new query parameter called version ID, where you specify the version of the orderable. You'll notice the description says if version ID is omitted, it returns the newest version. And let me just show you on Postman the different behavior. So this is on test. Let's get a token. So some of the demo data. So all the demo data now has a version ID, which generally starts at 1. And it's under this meta property for an orderable, which has also last updated information. And then there's one specific product in our demo data called the Acne Syringe 5 milliliter that has two versions of the orderable. So this one, so basically it generally shows the latest version. And then let me show you. So you'll notice that this is sort of the ID of the orderable. So when I'm specifically looking for this orderable, as you can see in the meta property, it shows it gets the latest version. And then if I wanted to specify the version ID, so like let's say I wanted to get version ID 1 of this orderable, then you'll notice that it has the version ID, and basically the only thing that was changed here was, let me see, I believe it was the product name. So here it has just says product name updated versus the version 1, which does not. So there's actually quite a bit of things that were changed kind of in the back end, which I will kind of post an update on the dev forum of the ongoing discussion about orderables versioning. Let me see. So I'll post an update here. This ongoing conversation, sort of the findings of sort of versioning this orderable, and probably we'll kind of discuss some of the more technical details of it on that post, and possibly also in the next tech committee meeting. And then in terms of the next steps, for this, so what this doesn't do yet is, what it doesn't do yet is, so this doesn't actually do any versioning yet of, or show any versions of the facility type approved products, which also should be versioned. And it also doesn't, do any kind of, there's no updating of the orderable to increment the version yet. So those are sort of the next steps in sort of the versioning of orderables epic. Are there any questions?
I have two, but they might be better served in technical discussions. But just briefly, I was curious about the time zone, the ISO 8601 time zone. I've just never seen it quite like that before, with the brackets and the name of the time zone. And then the other one is just, are we doing e-tags with orderables, and are we changing the way we do e-tags based on versions? Anyways, those are the two questions. We don't have to discuss them now. We could discuss them in tech, but I just wanted to write those down.
Yeah, as far as I know, I haven't seen any existing e-tags for the orderables
Okay.
Functionality we have to add.
And then, yeah, if we could fit that in, that would be it would probably be a low lift and it'd probably be very useful.
Is this scheduled to be discussed or at least showed in an upcoming tech committee meeting?
Which part?
Just the overall, what you've done.
I think we should add it kind of as a discussion topic for the next tech committee meeting. But I'll also post to the dev forum kind of as a prep in case people have feedback. And then maybe, you know, we would discuss it at the tech committee meeting in terms of sort of the updated conversation.
Okay.
Yeah, we might have to have some, I don't know, either an extra long one or two of them. It seems like we have a couple topics here.
Any other questions? If not, that's everything for me.
Cool. Thanks.
Thank you, Chung-san. Anybody else from Sam on your side?
Nope. That's it for Mind the Gap.
All right. Thank you very much. And so lastly, we have Team Parrot. So I will hand it over to Sebastian.
Okay, thanks. So let me quickly share my screen. And hopefully you can see this. So today we'll showcase some tickets. We have started working on the on some of the epics scheduled for 3.5. So we have started working on the demo data for fun and profit. We have also started the local consistency. And we are also continuing work on the CI. So we still have a few tickets in the improved CI to support teams. And we also have the release faster and with more confidence epic. So the tickets that have been completed will be showcased. I just also want to briefly mention the ticket that we didn't get done this sprint, and this is the Jabber's log initializer. Do not iterate over all the items. So we have made good progress on this in the requisition service. Paulina is currently working on adding appropriate integration test for this. And once we have that completed in the requisition service, we'll be moving the same approach to other services after it passes the review. The approach is basically to only retrieve the requisitions for which we do not have Jabber's snapshots, the initial snapshots yet. We also have another big ticket that is still in progress, and this is just about fixing all kind of random issues that we have with Jenkins and that have been in contact while releasing 3.4. So they are of various kinds, and they are listed specifically in this ticket. So if you want a little more details, then you can just check this ticket out. And finally, we have kind of related, but not that much, ticket about performance tests failing after fresh performance test server start. And we will be probably approaching this in a way that will allow us to kind of warm up the server a little bit before we start measuring anything. And this should allow us to limit the amount of random failures that we get due to the server being called after a redeploy. We also didn't start the caching of the grade components. This is much less minor because the only advantage of this is having builds being a little faster on the Jenkins. And with that, I will hand it over to Paulina, who will showcase the tickets that she has completed.
Okay, hello. I will share screen. Okay. So during this sprint, I completed the ticket to ensure all microservices get system time zone from configuration on startup. This ticket was about making usage of our env file, which contains settings for system time zone, rather than taking these settings from the browser. So I can show you how it is in our env file. We are this is the place where we indicate that our time zone ID, in this case it is UTC, and then I had to modify application properties files for services, and here we are assigning the time zone ID from the env file to this variable, and this is later used in the application. Moreover, the acceptance criteria was to add new API resource, so I added new controller in reference data to return this local resource for a time zone on a proper call to the endpoint. So to make this functionality fully work, it needs to be implemented also on the UI. And the object would be to make it more reliable for the system time zone rather than to take it from the browser. So this is all. Thank you.
So would it be possible to like really quickly show how the response of this endpoint looks like? Like, can we see it on the test server?
No, not yet, I think.
So the file settings resource is not implemented yet, or?
Like, I think you can just go to the server and type the local settings in the URL and go up. It isn't like required to be logged in.
So probably now you can just type in your browser test OpenMS and then the name of the resource. Yeah, so a simple response, right?
Yes, that's right.
And we also have another one, or is it just to this?
It's just this, because it is a job for another ticket to make it for currency and other settings.
Okay,
so this is all.
Paulina, can you go back to that search page, the GitHub search page that you were at?
Sure.
And go down to the OpenLMS config. So I just want to point out that this .env file under OpenLMS config is the old one. We kind of deprecate its use. We generally use the one above it, the setting sample under ref distro.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to point that out to people that we shouldn't try to update the OpenLMS config .env file there at the bottom, the setting sample instead.
Okay.
Should we possibly get rid of it then? I mean, if it's deprecated and has been for a while, it's going to be an ongoing confusion for people.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
sorry. I think that we actually referenced this in code from previous releases. So I think we've marked the repository as legacy do not use. If we remove it, you know, previous releases have some bits of code, is from what I remember, that actually go and pull this file. Or at least it's in the instructions.
But all the, so everywhere that used to reference that .env file have been updated to reference the setting sample instead?
It's been updated, but if you pull the read the docs for version 3, or you know what, the read me for ref distro for version, you know, 3 or 3 beta or something like that, it would still have a link to that old repository.
Right, but all the latest stuff has been updated.
Yes, yeah, sorry, correct.
Okay, so are there any other questions? If not, then...
Okay, thank you, Paulina, and I think we'll move to Jana.
Okay, so I'll share my screen. Can you see my screen?
Yep.
Okay. So I worked on the tickets, all the existing demo data. And as the scope of the ticket, I analyzed how many data we have on the OpenLMIS UAT and the Malawi dev servers in order to learn whether we have enough data to measure performance accurately. And I have come up with a document that contains the my findings. And when I was determining those data, Claudia and Sebastian helped me greatly. So those are the results. And I think those are the most important ones because they concern the user that has the most access to the system. And you can see those are the details. I base my work also on the table, on the non-functional requirements performance page, which you have here. And I also gathered the data for the most important users on the UAT server, program supervisor, district room manager, store manager, and warehouse clerk. So, yes. That's all. And this document is available in the ticket.
And you said that you added this to this page, the non-functional requirements page?
No, I didn't add it there. It is, the document is attached in the ticket.
Would it be possible to add this in as new columns into that table that you were looking at?
Okay, I can do it.
Just having all of this in one central location might be helpful.
All right. So, do you have any questions?
So I only have 2 points to make about this. So those numbers in the column named Malawi development, those are pretty much the numbers from our baseline performance testing. So the snapshots that we use on the performance testing when we are testing performance for the releases. Well, and the obvious finding is that we lack non-full supply products in the demo data. So this is pretty much the only thing that we need to add to have enough demo data to replace testing on the Malawi snapshot. And of course, we'll need to create a ticket in the appropriate epic for that.
Does that include things like requisitions?
Well, in the table on the page with the non-functional requirements, requisitions weren't mentioned. I only added information about the objects that were mentioned in the table.
Oh, okay. I understand now. Gotcha.
Well, but I think that the number of requisitions would be and is interesting for us because it affects like the time required to fetch periods for initiate, I believe, and also viewing requisitions that we measure for the performance testing. So I think we'll ultimately need this number as well.
Yes, I agree, but I suppose we should create a new ticket for it. Okay, so do you have any other questions or comments? Okay, so thank you. And I'll pass the ball to Claudia.
Okay, so first ticket is about reviewing contract tests and removing duplicates. And as a scope of this ticket, I removed some duplications from contract tests. And also, for example, facility type of approved products, I removed creating new FTAPs in all scenarios for creating and for deleting and for updating. First, we create a new one and then do such things. So I removed that because it was a duplicate. Yeah, and I believe that's it for this ticket. Do you have any questions about that? Okay, so next one is about making keeping build forever secure. And as scope of this ticket, I removed dangerous approvals from Jenkins and used a whitelisted method to set keep lock option. I've updated some conditions in our Jenkins file, which are incorrect because we were keeping builds only for release branches, but not on master. On backend services. Yeah, and basically and the approvals are removed. And do you have any questions about this ticket?
So maybe not about this one, but about the previous one with reviewing contract tests and removing duplicates.
Mm-hmm.
So have we seen any improvement in the speed? So the time required to execute those tests, like have we managed to remove that many to notice that it's faster, or was it mainly just about cleanup in the scenarios, but there is no noticeable improvement in the time?
I didn't notice an improvement. It was just clear.
Okay.
Okay.
And in the second one, the keep build secure, did we test that? And are we now confident that we don't have to go in and click all the little buttons for keeping the builds after we do releases?
So I think this was already completed in the previous, one of the previous tickets.
Yeah.
And this was just like a follow-up because we're using that unsafe option. So yeah, the builds are kept automatically forever for releases now.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Thanks.
Yeah, so okay, I will continue. Just share my screen. So I can see my screen. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so in this sprint, I was mostly focusing on, you know, finishing the 3.4 release, and I've picked up this ticket with the issue, fixing the issues with the Jenkins that we've encountered during the release. Some of those problems are already fixed. Two of them are still persisting, like the random failures on the contractors that we are still trying to fix. Yeah, but in the meantime, I was able to finish a couple of tickets. And the first one is the bug about fixing the startup of reference UI while the server is actually offline. So the problem was that we were getting from the using the apt-get comment a library to to be able to to replace those feature flags, replace the feature flags with the actual values from the env files with the environment variables, and this was actually done on the startup of the reference UI service. So getting this library was moved to the build process of the reference UI. So we don't require connection to the internet while starting the reference UI anymore. So this was fixed. The second one is another bug that we found about changing the type of transfer properties in fulfillment service. So we have two types, the local type and the FTP type. Using the FTP servers. So the problem was that actually the Hibernate wasn't persisting the change in the database. So I just added the flush on the repository and it works fine. As an addition, I've also added the conditional generator of the identifiers for the entities. So we can actually create an entity with specified ID before saving it. So I've also created a ticket to introduce it to other services, so it can help us with changing our put requests to be able to save also to create not only update but also create entities with specified ID. Yeah, so this is it. The next ticket is about re-enabling the Java import order in the check style for our backend services. So I've updated the file, the XML file with the check style configuration. It uses the newest Google style check style configuration. So I basically added it to all our services. some changes, some manual changes also were required, aside from changing the order import, some small code style changes. Yeah, so our check style is checking more things now. And all services are passing this check style. So yeah, this is basically it. The last one ticket that I finished today was about making possible to upload, the deploy UAT server with specific version of reference distribution. So this was changed in a way that we can go to the deploy UAT job on the Jenkins, and we can just pick up any tag from the GitHub repository with different versions of the reference distribution that actually has the released versions for each tag. The origin master option is the default one, and it will deploy the newest changes to the UAT server. Yeah. So I think this is all about this ticket. Yeah. So this is everything from me. So are there any questions?
I think just a note on that last one. So when we go through another release candidate process, if we want to take advantage of that in the deploy jobs, we'll have to tag it. We'll actually have to tag the release candidate in ref distro with AuthStory.
Not actually in the ref distro, in the deployment repository, which holds versions of each service for our servers. UAT test and so on. So we have to add our C tags there, actually.
The little drop down that we just saw. So if I chose version 3.0 beta in the parameter for this job, wouldn't it go pull all the 3.0 beta from ref distro?
Sorry, can you repeat? I didn't fully understand the question.
So if I went and chose the 3.2.0,
mm-hmm.
that tag, so it goes to the ref distro repository, pulls all of those services. No?
No, it actually doesn't go to the ref distro repository, just it gets the versions of the services from the, from the deployment repository. So it actually depends on the tags on the deployment repository, not on the ref distro.
Oh, because we've been tagging the deployment repository I see. Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so this was actually the easier way to get those versions. And also I've checked, you can't see the 3.0 probably, but all the other tags actually worked fine. We've checked it on the UAT server, and the versions actually mostly are matching. So
okay, yeah, I think that works. I think we have another ticket somewhere that might be something like reduce the number of, I don't know, I think it's labeled something along the lines of reduce the number of deployment jobs, or reduce, that's a different one, but I think there's another ticket out there that's titled something similar to that, where we wanted to reduce the number of Docker composes, maybe that's what it says. And you know, in all of these deployment directories. And I think in that one, maybe we're going to go back to ref distro and pull those out. It's just a fuzzy memory that I've got.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's correct. So yeah, if there are no more questions, I would say this is everything from Team Parrot.
Thank you very much. Any other comments or questions for Team Parrot? All right, I will take that as a no. One thing that I neglected to do was to go over the current sonar status. So whoever is sharing right now, if you could just stop sharing your screen.
I'm trying to.
Maybe I can do it from here. No. You moved it to an unmovable location, apparently.
Yeah, it seems so. Like, you cannot, like, disable.
I think now you have an hour and a half long bug report video you can give to Zoom.
That's right.
It's removed the internet connection, but it didn't drop me. Oh, man.
Let's see. Is there a way as the host to kick somebody, not kick somebody off, but you know. Oh, here, I can do it. I think this will knock you off. Okay, my screen show up?
Yes, you can see it.
All right, thanks. Okay, so here is the current status on Sonar. Looks like most of the projects are passing, but there is one that has failed. So I'll just filter on that. And anybody have any input on what's going on here?
Yeah, so the requisition currently fails on the Sonar due to the changes that are currently in progress with Java's lock initializer. And as I was mentioning, Paulina is currently working on adding appropriate integration tests for this.
Okay.
Also, there are some bugs. They were probably introduced after the Sonar was failing, so those also need to be looked into. If they are new, but yeah, they aren't, so it should be passing after we add the integration test.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last thing that you said.
So I was saying that those bugs aren't new, and Sonar is currently failing only for the new bugs. So the quality gate is failing just because of the coverage for the tests not being high enough. And as soon as we add the integration test for the changes in the Java's lock initializer, it should be passing.
Okay.
That might be useful, Wes. So I don't think we currently really look at bugs or vulnerabilities in Sonar as part of this process, but most of the ones that have, you know, little red marks here for either of those, if you actually look at them, they're red herrings that Sonar is marking. So we can go in and resolve them. It's a pretty easy thing. But at some point we should maybe review, I don't know, does anyone review this today? I go in every once in a while, but about it.
Yeah, and I think we only ever review this as a team during the showcase.
Yeah, and we only review the coverage, not the bugs and the vulnerabilities. Yeah. So maybe at some point we should start doing that.
When you were talking about coverage, you're talking about this value specifically here?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so I think discussion. We can take that, yeah, as a to-do, Wes, maybe, to review the bug and vulnerability and how we want to be using that in Sonar. Is it all right if you kind of take that on?
Yep, I'll do that.
All right.
Okay. I think that is it for each team. I felt like this sprint was pretty good. Last sprint was primarily work on getting the release done, going through the copious amounts of tests that we have to do. So this one, I felt like we had a lot of good work that was done, a lot of preparatory work, especially on the reporting side of things and on the MCSD, getting things ready to be able to push forward here in coming sprints. So does anybody have any questions or comments about this sprint or any of the things that we saw today? All right, I think that's it. We are, our time is up. Thank you very much. And everybody have a good sprint 108, whatever the next one is here. And see you again in 2 weeks for this meeting. All right, bye everybody.
Thanks everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good day.
Bye everyone.
Bye.
Thanks all.